point. I'm happy to announce Marianne Ignace and Ronald Ignace to be presenting Documenting and Reclaiming, pardon my mispronunciation, is it Sequipmund?
Sequipmund.
Ornithological Knowledge Through Research and Technology.
Great kohoidem, la is wiklem na elia, nwahu, nwai, et michus, tutkuch es sukuntem, et las chimstem, je ene de kalmuch, det michut. La i busmenskuch es wiklem na elia. Na kola eindel mena spipioia, nsukwa mokoto. So thank you all for coming, and we would like to recognize the people of this place, the wine people, and we are here to tell you about birds in Sequipmund territory, country, and as we think of them, know them, listen to them, and talk to them. And we want to actually start out our presentation with a bird story, Stepdekl, as we call them, and it's a story about Edwin Sandhill Crane.
Ma titel kentli as spektakel until men kikul yemi spektakel deskoklutluch. I will attempt to retell the story, but speaking in Shuswap, conversational Shuswap, and telling to these stories are two different genres that I'm just learning to do. But I'll begin. The story of the Sandhill Crane. In Kuwasis and Quat the Nochon from Wicht, as Edwin and Tluchtis and Tkaltk.
One time a woman saw a flock of Sandhill Cranes flying up high in formation.
Skaptum yim to Tluchtis Tkins Kiext.
It was springtime and they were flying north.
Am Jutuki and Nochon.
The woman said, I wish I was one of those cranes and I could fly like them. She whistled and she hollered for them to take her. Take me with you, cranes, and I will be happy. When they all heard her, they swooped down to where she was standing. They crowded around her, and the woman was lifted off by the powerful flapping of their wings. At first she hung onto the branches of a tree, but when she saw all the cranes, she got taken as though by the force of a whirlwind. Then she married one of the Sandhill Cranes, and she lived among them wherever they flew, and she became like one of them. But she could not fly as fast as the Sandhill Cranes. That is why every spring you can see her flying on their way north behind her husband and her children.
Hien Moses is Hienwulks is Edwin, Miaus he is the Tuchts.
If people whistle and holler at them, circle around, the sandhill cranes circle around, and then they circle again, and then they keep flying away. So this is the story about Etwin. We also call them, as we found out from one of our elders in one of our community, Nkwa. And it's a variation of the word for number one, Nko, because they fly in formation as though they're one. But it's actually the word that's used for counting people. So it bridges the interrelationship between them as birds that fly above our territory and sometimes land and fly very high in formation. They're very fast flyers, but then actually giving them the human characteristics as well and their name.
If you notice, she wanted to, she envied them. She envied the swans and wanted to be like them. But as when she becomes one of them, she can't fly as well as they are, and she's always flying at the back, trailing behind, trying to keep up. So it's kind of, be careful what you wish for.
And we'd like to acknowledge the artist who drew these amazing images. This is Tanya Willard, who is a well-known Tsukwamuk artist from Nisqually, who has worked with us on illustrating a number of these or stories. She's also a learner of Tsukwamuk Chin, so it was really neat, actually. This shows the technology, right, where she, with the help of the images she drew, then was able to tell the Sa'etwin or story. So in this paper, we want to tell you various things that our elders and ancestors know and knew about birds. What are birds, first of all? How are they classified within the Tsukwamuk language, Tsukwamuk Chin? And what are their roles and functions among Tsukwamuk people? We use them as ecological indicators to talk to and about environment. They appear very often in stories, just like the one we told you, and play symbolic roles, also roles as mediators, as ambassadors between the human world and the sky world, and between humans and their guardian spirits. And we will also tell you about bird talk, how various species of birds speak and speak back to humans in their respective languages that all translate into Tsukwamuk Chin. So it's about human and bird relationships, and Tsukwamuk is in the south central interior of British Columbia.
On the Pacific Ocean?
No. And we live in a very diverse territory, a country of 9 different biogeoclimatic zones that range from the very dry grassland steppes with cactus and sagebrush and bunchgrass in the river valleys to mid-elevation grasslands, montane parklands, and eventually alpine and subalpine areas. And especially grasslands and the wetlands they often contain are what we call the breadbaskets of species diversity, but they're severely endangered. Less than 1% of BC is grassland to start with, and 80% or more of the grasslands in the Thompson Basin where we live have been severely compromised because of farming, mining, urban development, and associated activities. This area here, which we call Pipsach, a trout place, was the planned site of a large open strip mine for gold and copper mining, which we managed to avert.
Using Tsukwamuk law.
And knowledge, among other things, of birds. And a survey of just that area itself revealed that there were as many as 136 bird species that live, migrate, nest in that area, and including some blue-listed species like sharp-tailed grouse, what we call skromka, and red-listed species and blue-listed species like barn swallow, great blue heron, and a couple of others. So we have, in the Tsukwamuk language, the class of living things that have sentience in the landscape and act upon one another, and we call this tmich, which comprises not just the land in a narrow sense, but everything within it, on it. So the animals, the plants, the landscape itself imbued with power, and it has the legacy of ancestors and even weather formations. And we don't actually have lexical roots for the word animal or plant. They're expressed generally in a variety of lexical suffixes. But unlike plant and animal, we do have a taxon for bird. And they comprise all feathered, winged, two-legged, warm-blooded, egg-laying vertebrates. We don't have any endemic species that don't fly. But when we check this with various elders, including I asked Ron just recently, an emu or an ostrich would definitely be spewed.
They're still birds.
They're still birds. And the class of songbirds is a diminutive and plural of spipioia. So this is our group of elders that we have recovered bird knowledge with, based on prior recordings and ethno-ornithological work. And some of them are not with us anymore. And we've also recovered some bird names through our story work in the that has been translating stories back in the indigenous language where we didn't have them before in Suquamuchin. So I'm going to skip over a couple of these and go to birds as ecological indicator species. One of their important roles in our culture and ecosystem, where the migration and occurrence of birds speaks to the co-occurrence or migration of animal and plant species that are harvested or in turn represent part of the food chain leading to harvested species. And bird talk is often connected to this, such as the song of the meadowlark, meadowlarkies, or robinies, the song of the robin. And so they speak to human and bird interactions. And here's one example. Barn swallows tell us about the arrival of sockeye salmon in our rivers, also indicated by the blooming of cactus. And this is the co-occurrence of biscuit root, Lomatium macrocarpum, it's misspelled here, with the song of the meadowlark. Meadowlarks come into our country in usually about the very beginning of April, just about as soon as they arrive, they start to sing, the males, and one of their songs is Tuhi, chupta kokela. And it translates as "you wasted my biscuit root on me," but they're actually telling us about you need to harvest your biscuit root, which was an important root plant, this time a year. Don't leave it until May, don't get lazy, because by about May the plant turns very bitter and it actually leaves a tingling sensation on your tongue, so you need to harvest it at that point, at that time in the year. Another one is the song of robin. Let's just see if we can bring it on. So that's just a little sample for those of you who don't know the song of the American robin. And Steve Ekstall, in his doctoral thesis on character talk in Interior Salish, kind of first pointed out that there's an interesting rhythmicity to the robin song. And we have a similar kind of little verse in Suquamuchin, and it imitates the song of the American robin. So it goes something like Tsuchinum Jich Chuchinum Slag Abiso Yapchinum Who Inter Nukwat Nukmetquat. So just kind of imitating it. But it's not just idle talk, because they're telling us toast fish spurt, or like the sizzling of fish that you're barbecuing, and it's a trout that you're harvesting at that time of year in our mid-elevation lakes. And it tells us then the trout are coming, so sing for them. And bend your willow sticks so you can make fish traps. Those are the old ways in which these trout were caught. Oops. And sometimes they give us social moral messages. So in one Sokwatmuk story, about the bear killing the beaver mother and trying to kill her children, but they get away. Meadowlark tattles, that's your son, bright nails. So because the beaver children actually killed grizzly bear's children, and they tattle from the tree, the meadowlark tattles from the tree that they've just killed their little, her little sons. Or sometimes as people do stupid things, the meadowlark tattles on them. So one elder was telling us, there was a man named William in the community, and they used to sing the meadowlark song, Sir William. What does that mean, Ron?
William's a shit ass.
So we want to finally just talk about birds briefly, of birds as guardian spirits. We have the concept of two types of guardian spirits in Sokwatmuk worldview and thinking.
Well, there's guardian spirits that you're born with, that you inherit, or that you're trained for. And the loon is one of these that is an example of a bird that can be your guardian spirit that you call upon in time of need to protect you. Mm-hmm.
Guardian spirit birds are actually worn or were worn on people's skin as tattoos, on garments and regalia. We were just recently at the American Museum of Natural History and found these amazing garments that were collected by James Tate that would have been Tequil, who are medicine people's garments. The top one, obviously, was of a person who had a grouse as his guardian spirit.
There's a whole book behind of this dream spirit questing that he documents on this vest. It's mm-hmm. incredible. Wish we had time to talk about it, but we don't.
And the gentleman on the bottom wears a hawk outfit. And some of the garments are about climbing into the sky world to the birds. And here's the loon that Ron was talking about.
Yeah. And the loon is also a bird of representing freedom. In the pre-colonial era, Tlisa, a transformer, used to go around transforming all the cannibals that were causing us harm. But in the colonial era, our chiefs brought Tlisa back to be an anti-colonial fighter to fight the king. And in defeating the king and coming back home, to escape the clutches of the crown, he transforms into a loon and escapes.
So deploying the guardian spirit of loon, and likewise they were worn in headgear as actual loons that represent the powers of the person, or in necklaces made of dentalia. And often they're tiny songbirds that are protectors and guardians, such as Pacific wren, the one who jumps around on the forest floor, as wrens do. And in one story, wren, who is really a person, but through training or inheritance with the powers of a Pacific wren, is sent to make a fish weir, but he is so strong that he gets the weir to build itself, the fish, the salmon to catch themselves and to hang themselves up and to dry themselves and whatnot, except then Grizzly Bear comes and steals his salmon. But with his particular powers of jumping around and swinging a little tomahawk and outlasting Grizzly Bear, he eventually kills him. But he goes too far because he takes off the Grizzly Bear's skin, puts it on his grandmother, and then he treats her like a young woman, which he should have never done to his kin. And so he suffers for that. And it tells us about you should not do things that let your power get away with you or get away on your power.
The power of get to your head like some people in the world we know of.
Cook step go.
About 9 minutes for questions.
Questions? Oh, okay, yeah.
Just a short question. You talked about birds as guardian spirits. I just wonder about traditional concepts of the soul, mm-hmm. and whether birds are associated with the soul and it's leaving the body, anything like that.
I don't know. We don't have no we have a concept of sumech, that's your spirit, your life force. I don't know whether that's
and when it leaves the body.
Yeah, and when it leaves, yes. And that sumach can leave the body behind in the form of your guardian spirit, whether it's a bird or a type of bird, an owl, loon, or hawk. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, people need to release them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You had to skip your slide about the sky world.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the sky world and what that means for birds and the relationship?
We have numerous stories that reference travel into the sky world, as other indigenous peoples have. And the sky world, it's like a parallel world, I think, that exists in a different place and time. But birds, obviously, are the ambassadors to the sky world for people and the messengers between sky world and the world of humans. And so that's obviously by way of flight. And so that makes them the kind of messengers. It's not the sort of like land of deceased or anything like that, but it's a world where often people's relatives, ancestors maybe, but it's different from sort of what they call the land of souls.
We don't have enough time to get into it all. It's a complex issue. Mm-hmm. It's like we have a concept of parallel worlds. There's also the people in the underwater people that we relate with, as well as the people on the land and the sky world. So we have we live in a three-dimensional world as a people.
I was wondering, I know in Australia there's similar concepts where, you know, you hear a certain bird song, you know it's time to pick a certain fruit, mm-hmm. or things like
yeah.
that. And I was wondering if you're noticing changes with climate change. I know in Australia some of those things don't correlate anymore because of mm-hmm. climate change. I was wondering if you're noticing similar issues.
Well, it's a couple of them. One is that as we showed with the picture of the grasslands, climate change or not, the environments are certainly changing. Mm-hmm. We've been affected hugely by wildfires, especially 2 years ago, and still suffering the consequences. And that does something to bird habitat, quite obviously. And you know, the longer repercussions of that obviously are climate change. So it is changing the existence of birds in the environment. And I think there is definitely something to what ethnoecologists and linguists have said, that if species disappear from your environment through whatever factors that include climate change, people no longer talk about them because they no longer see them, they no longer harvest them, they no longer know them. And we found this with the, we briefly mentioned here the one red listed species is sharp-tailed grouse, which has become very rare in our interior grasslands. And when we did sort of the ornithology eliciting with fluent speaker elders in our community, the other three species of grouse, which are willow grouse or ruff grouse and spruce grouse and blue grouse, were immediately at the tip of their tongue because they see them all the time. But they couldn't think of sharp-tailed grouse anymore in terms of its name. So there's definitely a correlation between those things.
There's going to be a compounded impact by climate change, but there's already what we call cumulative effects on the climate through overgrazing, mining, clear cutting, creating plantation forests, and doing away with the biological diverse forest that was once there that is habitat for a lot of species. It's a big issue.
Mm-hmm. And so part of where technology, I think, comes in is in terms of artwork, bringing birds back to our younger generation, and that certainly has sort of stirred some interest, and our younger people noticing birds more and in different ways than they did before. Maybe there's room for an app for that down the line.
What I found interesting, though, is how our people in the 1850s reached back into the pre-colonial era and brought back our transformer and transformed them into a anti-colonial warrior to fight the king in the spiritual realm, because we were conducting our anti-colonial struggle in the 1850s in the spiritual realm, at the legal realm, and in the political realm, as well as at the realm of war.
Yep.
I'm wondering, with the stories about animals, and specifically in this context with birds, a lot of the stories have some type of moral lesson, but how much information would the hearer of the story need to know about that specific species for something to click in their head and be like, oh, okay, and they correlate, because maybe it's a characteristic, like the wren hopping up and down all the time. And
They need to know all that. And of course, these stories are teaching tools for learning about the characteristics and behavior and interactions of animals, plants, humans, whatever species. So I think it's a double function. One is that they are ways to teach about those things and remind one another about those things. But they also, I think, harken back to a time where people lived and experienced an environment on a day-to-day basis, by way of traveling, hunting, fishing, gathering, camping, and experiencing those species and their characteristics and habitats on an ongoing basis. So then the stories themselves enforce that, continue to reference it, continue to remind people of their names. I think the context has so changed that many of our people don't get out on the land anymore, although some still do. And many of our young people don't get out on the land. And you compound that with impacts of climate change and of resource development that destroys the environments of those birds and other animals, then it's a combination of environmental and knowledge loss, and of course language loss at stake there.
These stories are the stories, like my elder said, that's our school. That those are like our textbooks, mm-hmm. our school textbooks, all these different stories. Mm-hmm. Give you different things, teach you about technology, about philosophy, about politics, about war, about making, you know, how to care for the plants and the animals, everything you could think of. And that's why they said that's why we're able to live on this land, in our homeland for the last 10,000 years.
Okay, I think that's about all the time we have. The next session will start at 4 o'clock. Thank you both.
Thank you.